Hello and a very warm welcome to Center Stage. Good to have you with us. Now, head of the Islamic Supreme Council of Iraq called on Muslim scholars to lead the Islamic world to its previous golden era. Addressing the International Conference on Role of Muslim World in Global Power Structure that concluded today in Tehran, Sayyid Ammar al-Hakim added that Islamic scholars ought to lead Muslims out of the current situation. He also made a very interesting remark. He said, "The Muslim world is facing various challenges at present," stressing that it is Muslims who face the challenges and not Islam. Welcome back. Now, today you're with Center Stage and we're talking about a conference which was actually dubbed the role of the Muslim world in the power structure or the globe. And I'm delighted to be joined by two top guests to discuss the issues related to this topic. Now, in our home studio, I'm very pleased to be joined by a prolific writer and established scholar. So first, of course, I have to say that we are delighted to be joined by my colleague also a professional journalist, I have to say, who's been carrying out lots of research on different areas of Islamic principles, Ms. Mahnaz Bahaji. Ms. Bahaji, it's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you very much for inviting me again. It's nice to see you again.
Thanks very much. Same here. I have to tell you that basically I meant to put the first question to you, so I wanted to introduce you as a second guest, but I saw that actually we have the pleasure of having you on the screen, so that's the reason behind what I did. I have to say that it's really a great pleasure to have you with us, and we hope that we can have a very lively discussion. We also have the pleasure of having Dr. Mohsen Ghambari with us, who is an Islamic scholar and researcher. So let's take a short break. After the break, we'll start our discussion on this very important topic, the role of Muslim world in the power structure in the globe.
An important international two-day conference on the role of the Islamic world on the global power structure kicked off in Iran's capital of Tehran yesterday morning. The conference was held under the auspices of Iran's Supreme National Defense University, the Islamic Awakening Assembly Secretariat, and the Strategic Research Center of Iran's Expediency Council. Dozens of leading figures and influential personalities in the Muslim world attended the gathering. A number of expert meetings were also held on the sidelines of the international conference. The conference was preceded a day earlier by the sixth meeting of the Islamic Awakening Supreme Council, as the participants exchanged views on the latest developments in the Islamic Awakening movement and the steps required to be taken regarding the movement. At the opening ceremony of the conference, Iranian Parliament Speaker Ali Larijani delivered a keynote speech in which he referred to economy as an important factor in the power structure of the world of Islam. He said, quote, "The West is opposed to economic bonds among the Islamic countries, and despite being powerful economically, unfortunately, the Islamic countries are separated at present and have little exchanges with each other, and have exchanges with the big powers instead." He also referred to the Western attempts to prevent Islamic countries from gaining power, and said one of its instances is readily seen in their plots against Iran to deprive the country of the nuclear technology, despite the fact that they know Iran is just seeking to make a peaceful use of this technology, especially due to the fatwa or religious decree of Iran's leader of the Islamic Revolution against the production and use of nuclear weapons.
Hello again and welcome back. Now, nearly one in four people worldwide is Muslim. There are an estimated 1.6 billion Muslims around the world, making Islam the world's second largest religion after Christianity. But Ms. Bahaji, still Muslims are not as powerful as they should be. Why do you think?
I think to put it in a nutshell, simply say they have no unity. They have not increased their knowledge and have not updated so far. They lost the ability that they used to have. If you go back to the history of Islam, it started in Arabian Peninsula. Although they were experts in poetry and academically, you know, learning the grammar, the language, but they themselves did not have any knowledge about the worldly life in terms of material, in terms of pipe, you know, running, in terms of electricity, or and so on. But what happened to them? Because they had the unity amongst them, they had the love of Allah, and they had understood the nature of this world, that if you increase your knowledge, wherever it is, like Rasulullah said, pursue knowledge, even if it's in China.
Right.
Because they were willing to learn and they were together, therefore, with the horse and thought, they came to the civilization of Persia and Rome and they took over. But then, when we lost that ability of unity and learning, then next to it is the losing the power. It's as simple as that. This is what the Muslims are facing at the moment, and I hope that the recognition is there, and I hope they can bring it back.
Right. You know, I think the fact of the matter, Ms. Bahaji, is that we've been talking about Islamic unity for a long time, and we know that this, you know, long-awaited objective has not yet realized. There have been lots of, you know, seminars, conferences on this topic. But to be honest with you, I think there is still a long way to go before we are united. So are you optimistic that this objective can ever happen?
I have just lost.
Okay.
I have lost you. Can you repeat it again?
Okay, I was just talking about the fact you mentioned actually disunity among Muslims as the first reason behind this sorry state of affairs. And I was just trying to actually ask a question about the impact of lots of seminars, conferences that we've had attended by, you know, scholars, but nothing concrete has unfortunately as of yet happened. So are you optimistic that this long-awaited objective will ever realize in future?
I just simply think, you know, we are talking about it, but nothing has been put in action. That's the Muslim are facing at the moment. If you look at the England, is a multicultural society. Here, every single people who immigrated from different countries, such as Sudan, Somalia, Iran, Iraq, and so on, they all have got a little territory and their own mosque. And they just started around a year or a year and a half ago to start participating with one another and understanding we are one bond, one united human being. But up to that 1 year and a half years ago, they did not recognize that. There was a fight, there was a dispute, there was they were just not wanting even to say hello to one another. I mean, that kind of attitude exists amongst the Muslim. I think there are lots of conferences and talks going about, but in form of, you know, becoming to action and doing something that just bring the real power to us, it doesn't exist. This is what I'm coming across. But I think the ulama, the scholars, has got a big role to play. If they get together with one opinion and a powerful fatwa that the love and the unity is essential, and just they looking at the common background of their belief, leaving the culture, that would have a sort of faster way to reach the power and taking over the West.
Right. Thank you very much.
I'm not saying taking over the West in terms of, you know, fighting, but then in another term that a Muslim needs to do, because human being and earth needs Islamic knowledge. That's the only way we can survive.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. Now, we know that China has more Muslims than Syria, Germany has more Muslims than Lebanon, Russia has more Muslims than Jordan, Libya put together. And Dr. Ghambari, another very interesting fact is that Muslims make up a majority of the population in 49 countries around the world. This should have implications in many fronts for the policies of such countries.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Thank you very much for your invitation. What I have to say at the beginning is to believe in ourselves as Muslims. Mm-hmm. You know, the majority of Muslims or the minority is living in different corners of the world. But unfortunately, because they don't believe in themselves, mm-hmm. they don't understand their own status, they cannot redefine their own identity in this new world. Because of that, sometimes the majority of Muslims are going to follow the law system or the culture that they are living in without focusing on their own society, on their own identity, on their own culture. So the only result that we can reach today is something ignorance of Muslims that are living in different countries, and they are ignorant of their own numbers. They are majority. There are so many people, so many individuals are living in different corners of the world, but the ignorance of their status and the ignorance of their own identity and new structure of communication is leading us to be not influential, but influenced by the other cultures and other peoples.
Okay, it seems that we've lost Dr. Ghambari. Hopefully we can have him back very soon. Now, in the conference called Role of Islamic World in Global Power Structure, Iranian Parliament Speaker Ali Rajani warned of the Western powers' plots to prevent the development of economic and trade relations among the Muslim states in order not to allow their empowerment and independence from the West. So, Ms. Bahaji, what do you think he actually means by Western plots?
Well, it's very clear. I don't know if you got the, did you have my voice?
Yes, sure. Please go ahead.
Because I just suddenly lost yours. Anyway, it's the plot is very, very clear for us who live in Europe. The whole banking system are in the hand of the Zionist regime, and the money has to have a background of the golden of the gold to back up the paper money. They don't have that. The plot is they are planning because they don't have these resources, the real resources in the hand of the East, all the sort of the earth, the gold, the silver, they all been compiled by Allah in the other side of the earth, which is the Middle East. The plot is to take that back, to bring it over here. And also the oil. If you just think, you know, they don't have much oil over here. Mm-hmm. So they need the Middle Eastern oil. The plot is, again, to bring that back to themselves. Mm-hmm. If they don't have it, they can buy it. But this is not what they're deciding to do. The decision is to create artificial war. And in other ways, sort of stealing. But the reason this is happening to the Muslim, they have lost, as Mr. Ghambari said, you know, the other, I forgot, is it his name is Ghambari? Yes, the,
yes, Dr. Ghambari, yes.
The fellow guest that you invited. Yes, Mr. Ghambari says, the identity of the Muslim is lost. They don't know who they are. Mm-hmm. There is the ignorance in them. There's a lack of confidence. And most of the Muslim are practicing Islam out of the habit and through the century, or they just think, you know, this is what it is, what I have to do. They don't have an understanding of this religion, that this not only is the prayer and establishing, you know, zakat and etc. and so on. Mm-hmm. It is to protect what Allah has given us. So the West are fully aware of that. First, they start 200 years ago to divide and rule, and they succeeded. Now the division is amongst us. Now, very, you know, cleverly, they're trying to get in to get the resources.
Right.
The war happened in Iraq, mm-hmm. and the war happened in Libya was all based on oil mm-hmm. and the gold. I mean, the documentary recently been released, I think it's a year and a half ago.
Right.
The documentary, film, I think is in all over YouTube now. I mm-hmm. don't know if they take it off or not. The reason they went to Libya, it was all about gold.
Mm-hmm.
Because they wanted to get the oil, and Gaddafi says, you want oil, give me gold. I don't want to pay for money.
Mm-hmm.
Can you see? America and England, they don't have the gold. They can mm-hmm. print paper money. And they said, I don't want to pay for money. Give me gold, I give you oil. That was the whole scenario and plot behind it. But then they just come in, oh, okay, Gaddafi was a dictator and Saddam was a dictator. So what? They put them there anyway.
Mm-hmm.
This is the plot, but then there is more into that, much more. I don't know if you got the time, we can go into it in detail.
Okay, thank you very much.
The plot is much more thick than that what we think.
Right, thank you very much indeed. So there are most certainly layers that need to be explored. Now, let's take a short break. After the break, we'll be talking about another point which was raised in that conference, and that was actually the fact that, the statement that the West is opposed to economic bonds among the Islamic countries. So we're going to also talk about that after this short break. Welcome back. Now, Dr. Ali Larijani, the Iranian Majlis Speaker, also said, quote, the West is opposed to economic bonds among the Islamic countries, and despite being powerful economically, unfortunately, the Islamic countries are separated at present and have little exchanges with each other and have exchanges with the big powers instead. And now, Dr. Ghambari, I think it's fair to say Muslims are far from being an economic superpower.
Yes and no, I can say yes, because of the status quo that we are experiencing, unfortunately, because Muslims are living in ignorance and they are not aware of their own power and the community that they have in different countries. But yes, because of that, but no, if they awake from the illusion that they are living and experiencing, they can experience new things and reconstruct their own capacities and their own identity. And I think reconstructing their own identity may lead Muslims to power and enough power to deal with the other countries, other organizations, and to be enough activists. And I think to reconstruct or to redefine their own identity, Muslims are in need of experiencing some phases. The first phase is focusing on their own inner power and that is faith and believing in God. If Muslims do believe that they are connected to Allah the Almighty and Allah is the omnipotent existent in the world, then they can believe that they are most powerful people in the world because they're connected to God through their own faith. And after that, the second phase is to spread and develop this faith and this power to the other communities. And the second phase is community building, after self-building. And after that, if they experience community building among their own selves, they can say, okay, this is the time for the third phase, and that is Ummah building. To spreading this power to the other nations that are Muslims, other Muslim countries. So this is by, relationship that is economic, cultural, political, and the other things. If they do believe in that, then the other countries, superpowers, cannot prevent Muslims from reaching that status, that point of power, the point of development. But unfortunately, we're seeing that yes, that there is great pressure, sanctions, demands in front of the countries and corporations and organizations that are dealing with Muslim countries. And unfortunately, the other things is that people who are superpower now and the countries like United States, the European countries are going to put you know, divergence among Muslim countries instead of being, you know, in a status of convergence. So this is something Muslims should be aware of, that to get closer to one another, to build the bridges of economy, culture, and politics within the countries that they are Muslims, but unfortunately the superpowers are not, you know, willing that, and they want to put Muslims back to become backwarded, to the status to become backwarded, not to go forward, not to progress, not to experience development in industry, in economy and the other fields.
But I think, Dr. Gambari, probably we are putting the blame on the West. Yeah. At the same time, I think it's probably important to have a look. For example, I know that I was doing a research on the Islamic websites, and you know there were some very shocking findings. Later on, I found that some top Islamic websites, they have issued some very horrific misunderstandings of the other sects, which are by no means true. So probably we also have to put the blame on ourselves as well, because we even are not probably ready to sit together, talk to each other, and remove some of those misconceptions we have about other sects.
Yeah, I agree with you. First of all, we have to blame ourselves as Muslims, because we Muslims are playing in the place or in the game that the superpowers are drawing, are determining that game for us, are showing that game for us, and that is divide and rule policy that we are receiving from the Western countries. So if we stop division among different sects, stop sectarianism, stop extremism, stop terrorism, stop ignorance, stop takfiri understanding and ideas and thought, then we can talk to one another, and we can build bridge between one another, and then can become powerful enough against the superpowers.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. Now, the leader of the Islamic Supreme Council of Iraq, Amr Hakim, said on Tuesday, yesterday, that the youth and the leaders of Islamic Awakening Movement should not indulge in internal dispute. Hakim also asserted that the Islamic Awakening Movement should go ahead based on experience and should explore different ways to avoid setbacks. But Ms. Bahaji, looking back on what happened in the countries affected by the waves of Islamic Awakening, I think it's fair to say that there is still a long way to go.
Not really, not long way to go. But I just wanted to make a bit of point about what Mr.
Gambari
said, that, you know, pardon?
Dr. Gambari.
Dr. Gambari, yes. Sorry if I just can't sort of memorize, getting old, I suppose.
I have the same problem, don't worry.
Okay, the thing is, you know, Quran has got a beautiful message for us. When we go to Prophet Adam alayhi salam, when they had made a mistake, they then start blaming this and that, and blaming Shaitan, or now like us blaming the West and blaming CIA. They blame themselves. If we Muslim focus and think and blame ourselves, why did we lose the power, and why do we have to sort of go to that out of our way? That has to happen. Some of our leaders become a slave of the West, and then we have to do revolution, bring things back. If we thought at the beginning, anything going wrong, blame ourselves and start putting it right, which is, you know, Adam alayhi salam made a tawbah, that means he put his action right. He went to the right things to do, which is Sirat al-Mustaqim, and asking the Lord, which is the supreme power, the one who created everything, will definitely give you a hand to do so. But in terms of, you were saying that, you know, there is a long way to go. Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam established Islam. It is all in a history. They didn't have this technology that we do, and they managed within 20 years or less to reach the superpower of Persia and Rome. definitely we can change that too. So I don't think we should, you know, promote this idea. We have got a long way to go. We should make it very short. We can do it. Within few years, we will establish Islam. We should bring the unity and the love back to our community. And if we just would be able to sit and talk about our differences and accept one another and our each other's fatwa and opinion, we can go forward in a, you know, in the far, as fast as electricity. This is what I think.
Robert, Ms. Bahaji, let's talk a little bit about banking. I know that where you're staying, London is one of the hubs of banking industry. And we know that when it comes to Islamic banking, London probably is very noted for the quality of the Islamic banking services that it's offering. But when you look at some Islamic countries, they themselves are lagging behind. So why do you think?
I think, you know, the problem is Muslim getting the Jewish system in and then trying to find the fatwa around it to get into it. Mm. The banking system, the Muslim do not need to bring that in. However, because we are interacting with the whole world, perhaps we do need some sort of similar system to be in there. The problem is we as a Muslim know the zakat will definitely get rid of all the poor. They didn't have a banking system in the time of the Khulafa, in the time of the Rasulullah. How did they just come about that they didn't have one poor person in their system? Later on, the corruption came. And I think if we make sure the rich gave as much as they can and educate people to give away their wealth, which they have to believe to some Allah will give, to some not, is a Surah Al-Nahl, I think Ayah 71, it speaks about it. Right. Allah will give to some people and to some not. Why they don't share it? Do they deny my blessing? If we start doing this, it's very simple, but yet it's difficult to do it. Then we look after the poor. We try to make sure that the people are not in debt. The usury, which at the moment is in Iran, they call it, you know, interest, that should go out of the window. In a Muslim system, there should not be any form of usury to be used, which we say benefit or interest or whatever you call it. And then we can, you know, completely make a different approach to our society and be a role model for the West too. Okay. The West going down the drain because they're using the usury system. Even in the Bible is haram, is forbidden. Right. I don't know why they're using it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much.
But then Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, says, you know, one of the sign of the last day that we are in, it's the dust of usury will sit in every household. We are in it. How are we going to wipe it up? I don't know.
Yes.
But I have got a way, maybe with another program I will explain.
Okay, thank you very much indeed for that. Now it's time for today's Central Stage online search, where we go on the internet for you to pick for you what's taken Central Stage over the course of the last week. But first, we are going to have a short break. Hello again and welcome back. Now today we're going to have a look at some of the websites and unfortunately I have to say that because our guests probably can't see these pictures on the screen, you have to bear with me to explain to you what these websites are all about. So the first one is basically, as you can see, Tasnim website. So Tehran hosts International Conference on Islamic World's Global Importance, and you see the scholars. As you can see in the middle, you have the former Iraqi Prime Minister, you have the Iranian Majesty Speaker, and they're thinking probably about different ways of defining the role of the Muslim world in the structure, the globalist structure. So let's go to next website. Right. So we are hoping that we can have the next web page soon, hopefully. It seems that my colleagues love this website, so they're not going to move ahead. Okay, I think we can't. Right, you have it finally. So it's actually the Islamic Republic News Agency, the official news agency of Iran. And so World Assembly of actually World Assembly of Islamic Awakening, or WAIA, to define role of Muslims in world geometry. That was the original, the original title of the conference. Of course, later on we translated that also to the global power structure. And the Iranian, the ex-Iranian foreign minister played an important part in that. So he also played an important part in the previous conference, which was about Islamic Awakening. Okay, let's go to our next web page. This is, as you can see, Ammar Hakim. So he also made very interesting statements. I think one of the statements that he basically made was about the challenges that we are facing. He said that the challenges basically are the challenges that Muslims are facing, not Islam. I think that's really interesting what he mentioned. Okay, let's go to our next web page. So I think this is a very beautiful picture, isn't it? You can see actually that Muslims are performing prayers around Kaaba. And this is basically, this has transformed to a symbol of Muslim unity, and it shows that Muslims actually from across the globe, they at a particular time during the year, they visit Mecca and they do pilgrimage. So that's, I think, something which is really interesting, because it shows how united Muslims can be. I think this is something which is unique to Islam. You can't probably see it anywhere else in any other religion. And it's also very interesting also to the followers of other religions. So the beautiful Kaaba, and also the beautiful Muslims, I have to say, who are praying. And they basically are quite, very interested in that. And I have to tell you that it's not very easy to get there, but Muslims really want to go there. And as I said, it's turned out to be a symbol of unity among Muslims. Great. So those were the web pages that I just thought would be interesting and relevant to the topic that we discussed today. Okay, let's talk about another issue and another conference which was held earlier. We know that a day earlier on Monday, Iran also hosted the sixth meeting of the Islamic Awakening Supreme Council. And the Islamic Awakening movement that swept through the Middle East and North Africa, including Egypt, Libya, and Yemen, we all know that it started in 2011 in Tunisia. But since then, Iran has hosted several international conferences on the Islamic Awakening. For example, we had Islamic Awakening and Youth Women and Islamic Awakening and Muslim University Professors and Islamic Awakening. Dr. Qanbari, obviously Iran's been very active organizing seminars on this topic, but what's been the impact of such gatherings and how things shape in the world of Islam and beyond?
I think the less achievement we can reach from these kind of gathering and seminars is awakening. Awakening as a gift from these seminars to all Muslims to understand their own identity, to understand their own responsibility, to act, to be active enough in their own society to fight the enemies that the enemies that are inner enemies and outside their enemies. As my sister said, we cannot blame the others, first we have to blame ourselves. But I want to say, we do have, according to Islamic context, we do have two types of enemies. The first one is inner enemy, and these are ignorance that we're suffering from today. The majority of Muslims are unfortunately suffering from ignorance of their own understanding from the current issues and current mainstream that is going forward, and they don't understand their own role and responsibility in this mainstream of the world power. And the other is external enemy, and it is Taghut, Shaitan. And Shaitan can be both from jinn and the human beings and the superpowers who are Taghut, who are obeying other than God. They are not in the way of God. They are their own standard people. They are humanism that are going to obey their own desires, their own will, not God's. So Muslims should fight these two enemies. The first one is their own ignorance to reach some kind of awareness, mm-hmm. some kind of connection to their own Lord, their own God, the source of power that is God. If they connect to the source mm-hmm. of power, they can receive enough power from God, and they shouldn't fear anybody else, according to the Holy Quran, Allah inna awliya Allah la khawfun alayhim wa la hum yahzanun. The people who are loving God and they are friends of God, they shouldn't fear anybody and they shouldn't become regret. So this is something we can receive from the connection to Allah the Almighty. And after that, we have to play our role, that is awakening. And awakening needs experience, it needs examples, and I do think that the one of the best examples that the other Muslim societies can follow this example is Islamic right. Revolution of Iran,
okay.
that is took part in 1979.
Thank you very much indeed. We have just about 1.5 minutes to the end of the show, and I have one question that I'd like to put to both our guests, but I'd like you to just keep it to 30 seconds. I know it's a very short time, but that's all we've got. So first up, let's go to London. What's your prognosis of the role that the world of Islam will play in the global power structure in future, Ms. Bahaji?
I think it's a great role. If the Muslim try to be God consciousness, to bring that back, which they are doing it, and if they do a bit faster, believe me, the Islam, the power of Islam is so strong, it will just cover the whole world. We're talking about before 9/11, we didn't have anybody to become a Muslim, but now over 5,800 per year become a Muslim. This is not what I'm saying, BBC sort of, announcing that. Imagine the power. The whole knowledge is there. If we just make it ourselves aware of it, and God consciousness, Allah's consciousness within you will give you everything.
Great.
And that Islam will have that power in the future and will definitely be established.
Thank you very much indeed. And Dr. Ghambari, we just have 20 seconds.
Yes, I don't think that we will have another power in the world that is Muslim power, and we will call it Muslim Ummah, inshallah. That is one Ummah, that is very most powerful one.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
For your valuable comments. So I'd like to thank again my top guests. We actually had Ms. Mahnaz Bahaji, top Islamic researcher and journalist, and we also had Dr. Mohsen Ghambari, prolific writer and established scholar. As always, your insights are much appreciated. Thanks for coming on, for talking to us, and of course, for those insights. Until next week, from me, our guests today, and the rest of the team here in Tehran, it's goodbye for now. Thanks very much indeed for watching.